Okay, powerful creators. So we are getting ready to welcome our next amazing speaker, inspiring leader to share her tools and her wisdom. And before I do, I just want to take a moment to just get present to the topic that we're going into and the territory that we're going into. You know, we are living at a time where even though women are powerful and brilliant and capable, we can still experience so much pain and disempowerment in our relationships. Not that it costs us our potential, but that it can cost us our very life force and our sanity and our future. And that's what we're here to speak about. And I was so struck in our pre-conference survey by how many brilliant, talented women are still struggling with these kinds of issues. In fact, when I mentioned earlier that Melanie was just about to join us, Kathy just posted in the chat, "Melanie is literally the reason that I am still alive today." So it's my privilege to bring you and invite you to join me in welcoming our next speaker, Melanie Tonya Evans. We're going to take a deep dive onto the topic of healing from narcissistic abuse, and this is your path to thriving. If this has been something for you that you've gone through personally, this is going to be really relevant. If you're someone who you can't identify with this topic personally, what you're going to learn in this session, you need to know, because probably in your circle of women that you know who are friends, circle of women that you serve, these kinds of situations are happening, and the tools that Melanie is going to share is absolutely key for all of us to be aware of. So if you don't yet know Melanie, she's a healer, an author, a radio host, considered the world's leading authority on recovery from narcissistic abuse. Through her programs, Melanie has helped thousands of people worldwide to not just survive, but to thrive. Her first book, You Can Thrive After Narcissistic Abuse, became an Amazon bestseller in days. Her work has now continued to touch the lives of 15 million people from 130 countries. And I know that this is something that is so personal for Melanie. So I'll share what I most love and appreciate about her in just a moment, but let's bring on and give it up for Melanie Tonya Evans. I'm seeing the posts in the chat. Melanie is the best. Melanie saved my life. Welcome, beautiful soul. Melanie, finally, we get to meet.
I feel an
admirer of your great work for so many years. I want to welcome you officially to Women Rising. It's such an honor to have you. And the thing that I want to just appreciate is just how valuable the tools and resources that you have shared. So many women who've worked with you have joined our courses, and all I hear is Melanie saved my life. Melanie's tools like turned my life around. Like, these are absolutely invaluable. So I'm so grateful to be here with you today, and welcome.
Well, Claire, thank you for such a beautiful introduction. And we have a mutual admiration for each other because I adore and love what you're doing, and our work is so aligned. So thank you for inviting me to this summit. It's just so special.
And where are you joining us from now? See, I've lived in the States for 20 years. As I hear your Aussie voice, you're going to start to call out the Aussie in me.
Whenever I've listened to you, I hear the odd word and I think, oh, wow.
Where are you joining us from?
Melbourne.
Fantastic. Well, welcome. So thank you. So you probably heard me share my introduction. I am so struck by how many otherwise brilliant, talented, accomplished PhDs, MDs, women who are brilliant find themselves in patterns and cycles of toxic relationship and narcissistic abuse. And we're so empathic. And, you know, so I'm just wondering, like, why do you see this conversation as important in a conversation about women and power in our time?
Claire, 100%. First of all, narcissists go after people with the goodies. They go after very resourceful, intelligent, capable, well-resourced people, and often hugely intelligent women who... And this is the thing I really believe, and I was one of them, that a lot of us women who have been earning love and approval, and we're high performers and high achievers, but we hadn't been self-partnered enough to really look after our inner being and our souls, because that wasn't what was appreciated about us growing up. It was very much about we had to be this or we had to be that, or we weren't enough of this or we were too much of that. And we've been really trying to please people to get what I believe are the four foundational pillars inside of us: love, approval, survival, and security. So even though we're capable and intelligent, we haven't known how to be an emotional anchored source of that to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what I hear you saying is this lack of connection with ourselves, this lack of connection to be aware of what we're feeling, what we're needing, what feels good, what doesn't feel good, right? This lack of awareness or lack of connection to ourselves and lack of being responsible for what's coming in and out of our space, and just feeling a desire to serve and to be good, right? Which so many of us do, right? We want to do good. We want to be good. It makes it vulnerable. It makes us vulnerable to people who are very self-serving. I mean, we want to go more into, you know, this idea of what narcissism is, but
absolutely.
But I love that you're naming and normalizing how common it is for gifted, brilliant, talented, successful women to have these patterns show up in our relationships. So I know this is very personal for you, this topic. Yes. How did you become an expert in this, and what's your story?
Well, I had no idea I was going to grow up to be a global narcissistic abuse recovery expert. My story is a lot of people's stories. I'd struggled with personal relationships. I'd done personal development for years. I'd worked on myself for so long. And a man came into my life who I thought was my gift from God. He was everything I'd been looking for. And it was strange because it was very, very instant, where I just felt this soulmate / twin flame thing. And for the first time in my life at 35, I thought, I know I'm marrying this man. And then what happened as we bonded and we got engaged very quickly, and I saw things and experienced things that I'd never seen or experienced before, but I did. I justified it away and I went back to my original vision of him and who I believed he was. And as it turned out, I was being, like so many of us in narcissistic abuse relationships, your head starts spinning because you are accepting behavior you would never, ever think you would accept. And it really shocked me. So I went through the mental, emotional, physical as well, spiritual, financial abuse, and even sexual abuse, to the point where I ended up being 80 pounds, I hadn't been able to eat for about 6 months. My hair fell out. I was seeing, and I believed it was me. The gaslighting was so, with all my personal development, I was such in this haze of gaslight that I couldn't work it out. And everybody thought he was wonderful and beautiful. They really did. So I ended up having a breakdown that was so severe that I was told that I would need 3 antipsychotics for the rest of my life clear, that I would never recover. I may be able to function at some kind of reduced capacity. I had adrenal malfunction so badly. And at that point in my life, I had already got out and in so many times. I broke no contact. I was living away from him at the time. I'd lost 2 properties I'd created as a successful businesswoman. I'd lost everything. I'd lost my business reputation, my family, my son had alienated me. There was nothing left. And I decided it's too much. I'm going to leave the planet because I'm not good with aspirin, let alone antipsychotics. I thought it's game done. So I'm lying on my bed and I'm contemplating, how do I do this in the kindest way for the people who love me? And this voice, and I was on morphine because of my psychotic breakdown, and this voice in my head said, no, there's another way. And it kept arguing, and I thought it was my madness. And I went to the bathroom in desperation, and I was on suicide watch with a person there. And I hit the floor and I put my hands up and I just screamed, help me, I can't do this. And I surrendered. It's like I let go of everything, and I didn't do it to be saved. I just did it because there was nothing else to do. And what happened was this incredible moment where it was like my head split. And I had the most blinding clarity that I'd ever had in my whole life. And maybe we have to be out of our mind to see the truth. And it was like his voice spoke to me and said, this actually isn't about him. He is a catalyst showing you what you haven't yet healed. And I knew what it meant. And I had all these visions of all the ways that I was so hard on myself, all of my conditional love, all of my shocking self-talk about demanding perfection. And I didn't even like myself unless I lost 10 pounds or I didn't get this done or that done, let alone love myself. And it was showing me how he'd been smashing me with all the unconscious ways that I'd been separated from myself and not whole within myself. And then the voice said to me, you can heal this if you want. And I got catapulted into the future, and I saw and felt myself as I am now, thriving and filled with source and light and empowered. And I felt it and I saw it. And the startling thing was, Claire, I'd never felt that before, ever, even before abuse. And the voice said, this is who you are in the future if you accept the mission. And then I got hurtled back into my emaciated 37-kilo body that was a skeleton, all my hair falling out in clumps and shaking and sweating. And the voice said again, you know, you can leave if you want, or you can choose this. And I chose it. And then what I did, my mobile phone, because I was still breaking no contact with him, I turned it off and I threw it in the bin outside. And they were picking up the bins the next day. And from that moment on, I never broke no contact. I was still decimated and tormented and traumatized. I didn't have the answer how to heal at that point, but I knew it was possible. And from that moment on, and then that night, I had a bath and I imagined my inner being for the first time ever. And I picked her up and I cried and I saw her and I said, honey, I know this is between me and you and Source. I know it's actually really not about him. He's the messenger. He's not the savior of this. He's the messenger. And I said, I don't know how, but I'm never leaving you again. And we're going to get this done. And then the most amazing things happened. Like synchronicities came into my life about body subconscious healing modalities. So I studied things like theta healer and kinesiology. And the startling thing was the next day I talked my way out of the antipsychotics with the CAT teams. And they let me go, which was a miracle. Mm. It was divine. It was a divine miracle. So anyway, it took me 18 months, but eventually, to cut a long story short, I ended up taking to body healing modalities like a duck to water, and I explored everything. I still had an agoraphobia condition. By that stage, I'd healed fibromyalgia. I'd completely healed complicated post-traumatic stress disorder. In safe places, I felt the most happiest and whole I ever had, even though I'd lost everything. I'd finally come home to myself, but I still had agoraphobia. And eventually one day, and I was already doing inner body healing modalities, but I knew through my study of quantum physics and body modalities that there had to be a way. And I opened my heart, my mind, and I just asked the divine and I said, show me, just tell me what I need to do. And I started taking dictation. And as I was taking dictation, I knew it was the answer. And it was quantum freedom healing. I applied it. I snapped off my agoraphobia in 2 hours. I was playing and extended in life how I'd never felt was even possible. And I was healing people already with what I was doing. And then I said, no, 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 we're not doing that anymore. We're doing this. And then it just exploded, Claire. It just, people were just, I had I had doctors and DV workers and psychologists and psychiatrists getting in contact with me saying, what happened to my client? Because they kind of came in a completely different person, and what just happened there? And some of them came to me because, as we all know, usually healers and people, you know, have got their own stuff. And then they started recommending it to people, and then it kind of exploded worldwide. And I was booked out months in advance, one-on-one, and I thought, I have to create a program because I can't do all of this. And that created the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Program, which has now gone through 130 different countries, and people are healing at home with this. And I guess the rest is history, Claire. Cool.
So what you're describing is horrible and traumatic, and you're so brave. And what I also hear you say, and from, you know, we sent out all of these surveys, is just how many women are experiencing this. And so what I hear in your story are two things. And I want to, you know, ask you questions to see if we can identify, like, what, you know, kind of like, what, you know, what is abuse? What is narcissism? But before that, I hear two things, like, that there are people who are toxic, and there are, you know, and let's say one version of that is narcissism. There's probably a lot of different versions of pathology, but you're talking about a particular kind of pathology. But the thing that I hear that's even more important in you say is that the only way in which you can be abused is there's an opening inside of you. Mm. There's an opening inside of you. Yeah. Right. And so I love that powerful frame on it and what you're seeing, like this horrible experience. What you began to see is, like, in what way have I been a space for this to allow this to happen? And it is possible to develop these deep structures in our own relationship with ourselves, in our own ability to create safety for ourselves, in our own ability to create sovereignty for ourselves, where we are not vulnerable to be taken advantage of by people or experiencing these kinds of things. So, so I'd love to, you know, I'd love to ask you two things, if we can go into this a little bit deeper, because abuse is a really strong word, right? Abuse is a very strong word. It's a loaded word. So, you know, in our relationships, what are the, you know, none of us are perfect. We all step on each other's toes, right?
Exactly.
You know, and so this is where it's like, it can, you know, abuse can happen because we don't really know what abuse is, right? And like, what's the difference between, like, we're with an imperfect person versus, like, we're with someone who is being abusive? Like, how would you define that?
And it's really important. I love that you brought that up, because the word narcissism can get bandied around so much. And you're right. Every single person, when we get triggered into an unhealed wound, we may not be nice, you know. But here's the thing with narcissism, and what I'm talking about is narcissistic personality disorder. Mm-hmm. It is somebody who is a pathological liar, 100%. It's somebody who's not taking responsibility for their behavior. So, yes, they do step on your toes, but when you bring it up or where you talk, they will completely invalidate your feelings. Your feelings are unimportant. So you are not a flesh and blood, soul, autonomous human being. You're actually an object. You're a tool. So they have, and it's, they don't have a desire to actually acknowledge your feelings, and they actually don't have the capacity or the resources. So they're going to twist and turn. There's about 20 different defense mechanisms that a narcissist will use. So they could stonewall you. They'll invalidate you. You've got it wrong. The problem is yours. You're the one who does that. Tit for tat. I'll bring up something that you did 3 months ago. And you feel like you're trying to, you know, talk to a five-year-old in an adult body. The twists and turns are insane.
So a healthy, normal person, right? Who's kind of imperfect. They step on your toes.
Yes.
And you say, ouch, you stepped on my toe and that hurt. And they're like, oh no, I'm so sorry. What happened? Okay. Let me try to like, that wasn't my intention. I'm so sorry I hurt you. You know, I stepped on your toe.
I'll
try to be more mindful about where I put my foot in the future, right? Versus.
That's right. And they may not do a perfect apology. They will acknowledge your feelings. It's like, oh gosh, I didn't mean that. I'm, you know, rather than hang on a minute, you know, that massive defense that comes. But the entitlement of narcissism is another big thing that you will see. There's a superiority. So, you know, they are the person, they've done it better. They have a better story. They're not interested in your story. They fact find when they meet you. They act very interested, and that's a whole other conversation. But what you start to see is they've done it better. They know somebody better. They're not interested in you. They're actually not interested. They don't allow you any space because it's all about them taking space and them taking energy. And the entitlement is very obvious.
And so, you know, and I think that's a really powerful differentiator, right? So
yes.
Like healthy people might do the wrong thing, but they genuinely care about their impact on you versus someone with narcissistic personality disorder. Number one, denies or minimizes that the impact ever happened. You stepped on my toe. No, I didn't. Your foot was underneath. Your foot was underneath my foot. What was I supposed to do? Right? Like that's right. Denying, minimizing.
Totally true.
Right? And then not really caring and not being interested. And what I see is just like so impactful is then you start to think that they're right. Right? Is that what happens?
I think what definitely happens with a lot of people is you get so exhausted in trying to stand up for your rights and your values and your boundaries because you just get more abused by doing that. You can just minimalize yourself and it just becomes your normal and you're just trying to keep the peace. And then you're trying to twist yourself into a pretzel to be different, to avoid the abuse. And because you are getting so much of the gaslighting and the projection that it's your fault, you do start to question yourself. But they're also very, very skilled at getting people around you in triangulations and telling you things about how other people see you. And you've got so much shame that you're not actually being authentic and questioning and presenting yourself in an open forum enough that you start getting into these shadows of shame yourself and you're not communicating with people outside of you because you think everybody's turning against you, that you're actually in the narcissist's lair like a vampire. Once you start diminishing and you're in shame and you're in shadows, you are exactly in the ring where they want you and can start dismantling you.
Well, and so, you know, I think that one of the things we're practicing today is loving kindness towards ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I just want to acknowledge this is like a very painful conversation if you're somebody who is in the midst of experiencing this right now. So what you're describing. So I want to just take a moment for all of us just to take a nice deep breath.
Beautiful.
And in bringing awareness to this and just feeling empathy for ourselves and just feeling empathy for, you know, the kind of misguided good intentions that might have us gotten into these dynamics. Can you share about that? Like what makes us susceptible, for, you know, being in these kinds of dynamics and being willing to tolerate them, right? Versus.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful conversation to have because it is really not just intelligent people that get taken in by narcissists. It's very loving people. It's very empathetic people. It's very sensitive people. And what makes us highly susceptible to narcissists is that you are somebody who doesn't want to rock the boat, who does want to give, who doesn't want to hurt people's feelings. And if we haven't learned a boundary function to be able to risk criticism, rejection, abandonment, and punishment for our own values and our own truths. And as children, I call it the fears of crap. Criticism, rejection, abandonment, and punishment.
That's very funny. And
yeah. It helps people remember it. But yeah, and words are powerful, and it is crap because as children, you know, we didn't have that ability to be able to say, well, these are my values and this is my truth and this is where I stand, regardless of what you are or aren't doing. So we learned to hand our power away. And we were, and so many of our childhoods absolutely had either somebody who was codependent who handed their power away to be loved, or somebody who was narcissistic who did power over in order to control their environment. Mm-hmm. So this has been very, very natural for us to not know how to stand in our values and our truths and be willing to lose it all to get it all, which is, you know, my values and my truths are kindness, their honesty, their respect, their validation. And if that's not you, well, we're just not a match. Mm-hmm. You know, we hadn't learned that.
Well, and I love you giving voice to this because, yeah, you're right. So many of us who had, you know, parents who either, you know, they hadn't, you know, they were narcissists or tendencies in that direction, or, you know, people that we've worked with, or even women who were friends in our lives, or, you know, being involved in romantic relationships. So what's the solution? How do we, like, what's the growth inside of us that needs to happen so that we are no longer a space for those dynamics?
It comes down to clear false source, true source. And this is what I found is it's the higher power component that is everything. Because I love how Don Miguel Ruiz, right? And it's such a powerful metaphor in The Mastery of Love, where he spoke about, you know, there's a man with a greasy pizza at the door and there's two different women and one isn't cooking for herself and she's really hungry. And he says, I'll bring you greasy pizza, well, this delicious smelling pizza every day, but you have to accept whatever comes with it. And she was so hungry and starving that she took the pizza. Whereas the other woman who has this nutritious, beautiful, well-stocked kitchen, she's satiated. She says, why would I take a deal like that? So if we're not, it's so powerful.
And I just want to, if I just want, I just want everyone to take that in, because what you said was so powerful, so powerful, right? Because, you know, kind of people come to us with all of these things that are, it might be, you know, what's the version of the pizza that you see in terms of qualities that people have?
And do you know what? It's the narcissist, because narcissists, how they get in, they're very intuitive and they fact find. They'll ask questions. They'll find what's hurting or what's missing, and they present as the beautiful smelling pizza. That's the gap. So if they meet somebody who is like, well, you know, they'll say, well, what happened in your last relationship? He cheated on me. It was so painful. And they will say, oh my God, I can't believe how men could not be monogamous. And look at you, you're lovely. And wouldn't you just say, look, we've got problems in our relationship. We're going to work on it before you play up with somebody else. She'll hear that. And she feels like a woman in a desert finding the oasis. Like, you are the conscious man I've been looking for. I've had narcissists contact me in my blog bragging about how they hook people that way, exactly that way. Business deals, friendships, whatever. They'll find what's missing that you don't think you're a generative source of. Be the agitated a bit, then be the solution, and it's the Trojan horses through the gates. So that's the greasy pizza. So where we need to be, and what I've discovered in my journey, that epiphany and then following it through, and what I've done in my community, is to address and find the trauma of our gaps and our emotional hurts and disappointments, load them up, release them out, which is where quantum freedom healing comes in, and then fill in that space with that true source light to go through the pain body, our childhood, our past life experiences, our multidimensional body feel, and it resets us to wholeness, where we just are love, approval, security, and survival. And when that happens, you become that woman in the kitchen who's well stocked and satiated, and who you're being completely changes how you're thinking and what you're doing.
So thoughts and ideas like, I'll never be successful with this person, I'll never be able to make it without this person, if this person leaves, it will be the end. Signs that you're hooked into one of these cycles?
Absolutely. Because this is it, see? When you're hit by the narcissist freight train, it is absolutely like you're crossing a road, you're hit by a car, you are broken and bleeding. Those four inner individual pillars of your inner identity, love, approval, survival, and security, are all shattered. They're literally shattered. So then what happens is you go into an infantile regression. You feel like a broken, young, insecure person in your body, 100%. Then you're latching onto the person who has shattered you, trying to get them to fix it. And it's a perverse addiction, which is absolutely Stockholm syndrome. It's childhood infantile regression. It's things which are called repetitive compulsion disorder. The trauma bondings are horrific. And this is what drives people crazy. And it drove me crazy. I'm an intelligent, smart woman. Why can't I get it through my head to let go? And what I discovered was all of these, and that's why the medical community said, we just need to drug you. That's the only way this is going to stop your psychotic breakdowns. But what I discovered was they were all being generated from exactly what you named, those parts inside, those traumas of, I can't survive without him, which goes back to so many women in our DNA. We have those ancient survival programs, without a man, I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. If we don't get to that and actually reverse that, see that? And here it is, you know, like you're hit by that bus, that truck, you're shattered on the road. And where most narcissistic abuse recovery goes wrong, it's like, imagine if all the bystanders just ran after the driver and nobody picked you up and put you in the ambulance and got you medical care. But this is what we've been doing with ourselves. I'll just research narcissists. I'll just research the driver. I'll just research my organs failing and everything that's happening to me while I'm lying there broken and bloody. How about we heal it? And you've got to go within to do that. And that's why people aren't getting better, because they're doing it from the chin up instead of the chin down.
What you're naming, and I think this is really where our work, you know, is so aligned, it's a path of growth. You have to grow these new structures inside of you, that thinking different.
Absolutely.
You need to grow these different structures, how you listen 100%. To yourself, how you talk to yourself, how you connect to yourself, how you stand for yourself, how you're aware of what feels good. Like that becomes where you are the, you know, you're eating from the Whole Foods kitchen and are nourished and are whole and are not in lack and wanting and exactly. build a way, right, in which this is in. So if anyone listening is currently experiencing what you're identifying right now, what are the steps and what's the path out and the path to thriving?
Yeah, sure. And I just want to say, because people are asking in chat, this is any narcissist in your life. It doesn't have to be a romantic relationship. Okay.
I love that. And can we just, I think probably we all have one or more of these. So let's all do it. Are we ready? Are we ready to let this go? Like it is costing us our life. It's costing us our purpose. It's costing us our energy.
Everything.
It's costing us our sanity. It's costing us our wholeness.
And it's costing the beautiful people in our life that we want to have our life force and our love and our diligence available for. Because when you're trying to survive your wounds and narcissistic abuse syndrome, all of your life force is sucked into trying to survive your wounds, and it's not available for inspiration, creativity, expansion, synchronicity, and miracle. It's just not, you know. So it's everything. Okay, the steps.
How do we do it? Let's do it. Yeah. We're all gonna do it now. We're ready, Melanie.
Okay, well, first of all, it has to be a decision. It's going to be the hardest decision in your life. It's like, I'm going to let go of trying to make somebody who has no desire, capacity, or resources to be my source. They're a false source. They're a false self. There's actually nobody home there. They're an ego construct that is a falsification, that is an empty black hole that always needs to suck energy for it to survive. There's nothing there to get. So you have to let go. And then the first thing is definitely no contact or strict modified contact is incredibly important, so that you can get the space to heal. Now what's going to happen is you are going to be hit by aftershock, and people don't explain that to you, and you need to know about it. When you let go, you're going to feel worse before you feel better, because you literally have a chemical, physiological, peptide addiction to this person like a drug addict. Your body is used to getting the peptide rushes of betrayal, invalidation, emotional annihilation, lies, all of those things. Your body is hooked on it. So you are going to obsess and give yourself all the cognitive dissonance reasons to break no contact and go back. And this is where a lot of people fall over, because they think no contact and modified contact is enough. It's not. It's the beginning. Then you need to turn inwards with really good tools. And I love the quantum tools to be able to start getting the shifts inside your body to reprogram your inner love code. If the people I love betray me with a heap of emotional energy tied into it and super glued, you've got to do that inner work with your subconscious to get that up and out and reprogram it. So the steps really are let go of trying to make a crocodile roll over while you scratch its tummy and it fetches a ball for you. It's never going to happen. So you kind of have to stand up to yourself and say, I'm done. And be really aware you're in for a tsunami. This is not going to be easy. It's going to be horrible. It's like when you put down a cigarette or a drink or the poker machine.
Well, and this is if this person is like really a big part of your life, right? Like you're in a very close relationship with.
Even so, this is the creepy thing about psychic vampires and narcissists. This could be like a friend. It could be a therapist. How do we know when we've got a peptide addiction to somebody? We're obsessing. We can't stop thinking about them. It's like they're living rent-free in your head, because they've actually literally triggered parts of you into fully blown trauma that is then creating the body-brain connection of a peptide cocktail that you are stuck in that matches them.
Well, so just bringing this back to the step. So number one,
yep.
Commitment.
Yes. Right?
Number two,
breakaway.
Contact, breakaway.
Yes. Right. Yes, or and strict modified contact, because you may
you
still
might have
be in the house.
Or people that you have to see, right? But very boundary yes. contact.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And then number yes. three, this is like you need to chemically, emotionally, and psychically begin your healing process.
100% without that, there's two things that are going to happen. You'll keep, and it doesn't matter how much, if you keep it from here up, which is talk therapy, researching, you're not doing the work, okay? It's akin to you're not getting in the ambulance and getting help. You're just researching. And what will happen is this chemical addiction in your body, you'll break no contact, you'll be an obsession, and then you'll have to pick up co-addictions to try to numb out. So it'll be like smoking, drinking, food, alcohol, medication, because you are not going to be able to escape. Well, it's like Pema Chodron famously said, something doesn't stop hurting until it's taught you what you need to learn. We need to come in and do that inner work, and then the whole thing will dissolve and break off, and you will, that whole narcissist will be like a memory of a memory, and you'll look at them and it's as unappetizing as a greasy pizza.
Right, to somebody exactly, who and that's what changes instead of your like hunger, like you're not being able to resist the pizza, you kind of become repelled and repulsed by the pizza.
Totally. 100%.
And that's how you know you've healed, right? When
absolutely.
You literally feel like you're repelled by it.
Yeah. And also too, you're not that person to go, I'm done with that, I'm over it. It's like, I can talk about it. You know, like it's like when I shared the story with you guys before, like it's an amazing story and it still gets to me, but it's a memory of a memory. That those traumas are gone and they have been for years. Hence why I don't have CPTSD, fibromyalgia, adrenal malfunction, or any of those things anymore. They're just done. So I can think about the past narcissist and it's like a memory of a memory. That's how you know you're healed.
Can you share for anyone in the midst of this or going through this, just the vision on the other side of how, like what thriving looks like on the other side and just like the, like what the experience is on the other side and to be able to thrive and what's possible.
Oh, I love that, Claire. And, you know, from my heart to everybody's, the biggest thing for me with thriving was finally I fully accepted and loved myself. I stopped trying to be who everybody wanted me to be, because I knew Source had my back, so I could show up honestly, authentically. I could lose it all to get it all if something came into my life, rather than having that feeling of, oh, I better have this because there may not be something else. It was like I just learned and knew and embodied that I set my bar, and rather than try and demand things to make them match me, I would command. This is my truth and my values. Come and join me if you want. If you don't, we're not a match. And as every door shut in my life, who I was came. So, you know, I am so blessed because in my life I have a beautiful love partner who is a soulmate. I have, you know, a small tribe, quality, not quantity, of my deep, intimate people. I've been able to have a comeback from complete and utter financial devastation of losing everything at 40 years of age, where my life has never been more abundant and joyful. I no longer have the fear of, I'm not afraid of the death of anything anymore. I'm just, I guess words can't explain, but if I was to say to you, if somebody came along and said, here's $5 trillion to go back to life even before abuse, no way, because it was that being finally landed square on my butt with nowhere to go, that was the absolute turning point for me to turn within, because there was nothing left. And I guess my biggest mission is to say to people, don't leave it as long as I did, because it wasn't easy, I promise you. It was really, sometimes it was second to second, hanging in there and getting through that. But what I want to say is, what awaits? This is what I love about thriving, because we end up healing what we've always needed to because of this, right? Which then releases you into true self and true life. We see it all the time in our community. It's beyond what people even thought was possible.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Melanie, you're an inspiration, and your courage and your wisdom, your journey, and using everything you've learned to lift others up and to have them stand on your shoulders and share all of your best tools and resources is a really incredible contribution to us all. And I'm so grateful for you coming into our session today and giving voice to this conversation that's often difficult for us to admit or to talk about or to share with other women in our lives, that we find ourselves in these situations, that it's a, it's a source of shame. And I feel like what you have given and what you open up in our circle is just the permission to, with loving kindness, be able to face this, to see what it's costing, to see it clearly, and to see what the pathway is and what we know we need to do, that now is the time. You know, we can't let ourselves be held back by these patterns, and that we need to grow.
So true.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so grateful to you. And we've been doing a really fun thing at the end of all of our sessions today.
Okay, good.
If you're willing to play with a little.
Of course, I love playing.
Invite you to. So you have shared a lot of energy with us. You've shared a lot of wisdom. You've shared a lot of knowledge and tools and that energy. And we have received from you the things that are most valuable for us. Mm-hmm. And we've received your beautiful energy of hope and of possibility and of resilience and of healing. And so we want to just invite you into the center of our circle and just imagine that we are now surrounding you and we are amplifying and sending that field of energy back to you tenfold. We are sending that field of energy back to you to ignite, activate, to support whatever's in your heart that you're creating next, to amplify your brilliance and to extend our field of energy to you and for what's emerging and for what's next. So thank you so much for joining us today. We're so grateful to have you with us. Thank you for your work. So grateful for your sisterhood.
Oh, I love sisterhood.
Connected in this way, so...
Claire, I love what you're doing in the world. Beautiful lady, keep it up. And thank you everybody for being here today. It was just a joy.